straight over to the update from ESMA. Michael, are you ready?
Yeah, thank you. We can go directly to the next slide. I talked about the project already once or twice here. So ESMA will mandate an electronic reporting format for all European issuers. What have we done so far? We published a consultation paper in 2015. We analyzed then all the responses and published then last December a feedback statement in which we first of all summarized the feedback received, but we also set out the broad policy lines that we want to take. And we are now working on the detailed technical specifications, and we will most likely, or at least we at least aim to finalize that in this year, and to also field test them, and to submit a regulatory technical standard to the European Commission for endorsement by the end of 2017. So if we go to the next slide, just a very brief summary of what the broad policy lines are that are included now in the feedback statement. So first of all annual financial reports will have to be in XHTML. Then where these annual financial reports contain IFRS consolidated financial statements, these have to be tagged with XRL tags. All the other annual financial reports will remain for now untagged. So out of the, let's say, 7,500 issuers we have, 5,300 would be subject to XBRL tagging requirements. And where the financial statements have to be tagged, they would be tagged with XBRL, and the tags would be embedded using the inline XBRL format. And the IFRS taxonomy, as prepared by the IFRS Foundation, would have to be used. In order to accommodate the concerns of many issuers, we also included a phasing in, so that for the first 2 years there would be only the primary financial statements be mandatorily tagged, and only afterwards there would be tagging for the notes. However, of course, voluntary tagging would be always possible. So if we go to the next slide, as you probably know, or you certainly know, only setting out these broad policy lines wouldn't be sufficient. We need to give also further technical specifications. For instance, what should be the level of tagging? Should there be detailed tagging everywhere, or should there be block tagging in some parts of the financial statements? Should extensions be allowed or not? And if extensions are allowed, what kind of extensions should be allowed? And should ESMA develop a regulatory extension taxonomy or not? And if yes, how far and how broad should the scope of this extension taxonomy be? I'm going to the next slide. You see a bit the issue we face in our project. Whatever we do, there is no perfect solution, which is appreciated by everyone. First of all, because we have to balance different interests, and we have to balance different objectives. For instance, if we take the example of the level of tagging, on the one hand we have the objective to make the annual financial reporting as easy to prepare. In fact, actually, the Transparency Directive talks even of making it easier compared to current practices, which is probably a bit challenging, but nevertheless, making it as easy as possible is at least certain an objective that should be achieved. And, of course, there should be data available for analysis, because that is the main purpose of the whole exercise. But when we talk about the level of tagging, we see that there is a contradiction. On the one hand, if we require full detailed tagging, then obviously there is a lot of data available for consumption and analysis, but obviously it's more difficult to prepare that. And so, on the other extreme, we could do something that is easy for the preparers, such as tagging only the primary financial statements and only tagging when there is an element available in taxonomy, and what is not available, you just don't tag. So that would be easy, but of course, as you can imagine, large parts of the financial statements remain untagged, which would again create a problem. Another example, going to the next slide, of such contradicting objectives is, on the one hand, we want to have comparability, on the other hand, flexibility. So exactly the same contradiction as mentioned before by Rachel. So on the one hand, it might have benefits not to allow any extensions, because then, well, we heard that the consumption of extensions by users is not always easy. So some say it would be would increase or facilitate the comparability if there were no extensions. On the other hand, obviously, that puts the preparers in a straitjacket, and this is also something we want. So the other extreme would be that all extensions would be allowed, but then we heard from users that this makes it very difficult for them to consume. So how do we balance these different objectives and these different interests? So going to the next slide, what we did was that there was a study undertaken. We prepared a scoring model where different criteria were defined, and each of the implementation options was matched with these criteria and was assessed in how far each of the implementation options fulfills the criteria. And you see that there are different weights to each of these criteria. So with three main criteria, on the one hand, okay, well, how much data would be available for processing? How would this implementation option facilitate data comparability and analytical possibilities? And then the last main criterion, what would be the effort on the filer side? And then there are some subordinated criteria, one of them amongst others, also what is the effort for ESMA, because in the end we also somehow have to implement it. So what was now the outcome of this exercise? What are the current considerations we have? So going to the next slide, we see regarding the level of tagging. What the current consideration is now to require that the primary financial statements have to be tagged in full detail, whereas in the notes there would be only block tagging for the largest part, at least. And there would be only a few exceptions where we'd go on a higher level of detail, and where there would be detailed tagging also in the notes. And on this slide you see the list of the elements that we are currently considering to require to tag in detail in the notes. And mainly these refer to information which is basic information about the entity itself and very basic information about the financial statements. So, for instance, things like the name of the entity, domicile of the entity, legal form, country of incorporation, but also if there is uncertainty regarding going concern, that is also something that would have to be tagged. Going to the next slide, we see then, well, but only saying block tagging should be carried out in the notes as such is not enough, because there are all different granularities when it comes to block tagging. So we see here an example, it's actually a filing to the SEC. We see here a disclosure of minimum lease payments. And on the one hand, it's here tagged in detail because as required by the SEC, wouldn't be required by us. And then there are two different levels of block tags. So one where this schedule is identified, and then another one because this schedule is part of a larger block, which is the commitments and contingencies disclosure. And what would be required by us only is only the larger block tag, the one commitments and contingencies in this example here, and no lower, no higher granularity would be required. And going to the next slide, you see then you see some examples of how the granularity of the block tagging would be. So it's relatively on a high level. So you would provide only, let's say, one disclosure of associates, and you wouldn't give more details to all the disclosures here regarding the associates. However, it has to be said, we consider to allow detail tagging, so that is the minimum requirement that everybody has to fulfill. However, we definitely encourage filers also to tag in detail. So going to the next slide, you will see also what our current considerations regarding the use of extensions are. As you probably remember, I think, let's say 1.5 years ago or something like that, I presented here our consultation paper. And in the consultation paper, there was also our initial idea not to allow the use of any extensions. And I can remember that not all of you were entirely convinced by this proposal, which is probably a euphemism for that there was general disagreement with that. And this was also reflected in the consultation. So also the feedback we received in the consultation paper was that the IFRS taxonomy as it is now requires that extensions are allowed, otherwise reporting is not really useful or possible. Of course, we listen to this feedback, and we are now indeed considering to allow the use of extensions. However, nevertheless, we are still concerned in how far afterwards extensions can be consumed by users. And we therefore think there should be some framework that guides the creation of extensions. In this context, we also note that there is this task force by XBRL International on entity-specific disclosures, and we noted that this task force also recommends to anchor extensions to the two elements in the base taxonomy, and we prepared now some draft rules to explain how this anchoring should work, and basically the anchoring should work using essence alias relationships and general special relationships. Then what are the next steps? Going to the next slide. We will have to, first of all, gather input on all proposals that we have now. So I just presented them here very briefly now, but if you are more interested into the details, they are published also on the Eurofiling website. We held a workshop at the margins of the XRL week last week in Frankfurt, where we also seeked input regarding our current proposals and considerations. It's still possible to write to us. There's afterwards some more detail how to respond. So that's the one thing we have to do, gather input on our drafts, and then afterwards to finalize them, and then to field test also our proposals. And we are considering now how to structure this field test, and the current idea is to call for issuers to volunteer in such an exercise. And we probably think about selecting 20 or 30 of these issuers and to invite them to ESMA and to transform the annual financial reports together with XBRL experts provided by ESMA to inline XBRL, to afterwards publish these reports, to also allow users to give us comments on in how far they think that this data is usable for them, and whether there are some things we could consider in order to make them more useful to them. And we'll also explore whether officially appointed mechanisms that are responsible for storing the regulated information would be willing to participate in such a field test to see what issues they would have with this data and what we could do in order to make it easier for them also to consume the data and to to disseminate it to the general public. Going to the next slide. As mentioned before, we published on the Eurofiling webpage these working drafts, and we are very happy to receive any feedback on them. Also, you don't have to be concerned. We do not intend to publish the feedback we receive, so it would be just we are seeking informal input. So if you have any thoughts, just drop us an email informally, and we'll consider that. There is the specific email address, sf@esma.europa.eu. So that was it from my side. If you have any comments then, or any questions, then I'm happy to take them. And one thing, probably the input, going to the next slide, there is a disclaimer. I specifically want to mention that one here, because what we published is definitely not approved by either ESMA's Board of Supervisors nor by the ESMA chairman. So it's really only current staff considerations. So obviously, I would say much of that what I spoke about might, at least in some details, change, or probably not so much what I talked about now, but at least much of that what you would see on the webpage would change. So detail rules might definitely change, also taking into account the input we receive.
Okay, Luke, you had a question.
So, you know, I get the idea, at least in the short term, of not going into the detailed tagging of the notes. Is there discussion about getting there long term?
Well, certainly there is. That is always an option. What we felt would be appropriate is to give it some time afterwards. It says how useful people find the data in the structured format, and then if they find it very helpful, but would find it even more helpful to have it in detailed with detailed tagging, that is certainly an option that would be on the table to extend the tagging afterwards. But there is no detailed roadmap that says after 2 years we will go to detailed tagging.
Do that, there we go. I'll move this other way. You mentioned the possibility of tagging detailed items. You've got any examples of what sort of items you're thinking of? You're talking about tagging the primary financial statements, and then I think you were talking about some of the items within the notes also being tagged.
Yep.
What kind of items were you thinking about in that respect?
Yeah, there was on the slide before the detailed list, but some examples are, for instance, the name of the entity, the where the entity is domiciled, the name of the parent entity,
yeah,
or whether there, for instance, are uncertainties regarding going concern.
So what about items that might be of a particular interest to investors that but don't appear in the primary statements, they're in the notes? Would you be drawing any of those items out as being tagged?
Well, if we receive, for instance, now the feedback from users that says, well, give me this element because we think it's so important.
Yeah.
Well, certainly we could consider that, yeah?
Yeah, okay.
So the list is not final, so yeah, there might be changes to that, of
course. Yeah. Now, because I saw that list and it was a list of, I suppose metadata, I suppose is the best way to describe it, and I just wondered whether there might be scope to see other information tags as well.
Yeah, but if you have some suggestions that we should consider, then
yeah, okay, all right.
Just drop us an email.
Cheers.
I didn't hear the answer, so.
So just before we go on to Mike, I wanted to check to see if there was any calls or any questions from those dialed in. No?
Akira Toshi Enomoto from Japan FSA. Could I ask about the time frame of field test?
Yeah. Yes, we would like to do that in summer. So most likely July, August, September, something in that area. So it's pretty soon. But if we want in the end to submit the regulatory technical standard to the Commission by the end of the year, well, we have to be ready with the field test at the latest in October, I would say.
You didn't have a question any longer, so Mike. Was there another one from the call? No.
Yes, this has been last. Yeah.
Okay.
I just have a quick question. I want to ask whether this new requirement affects any foreign company listed in Europe.
Yes. First of all, all of them will have to prepare now the annual financial report in XHTML, so that affects every issuer in Europe, also the third country issuers. And if there are issuers from third countries that prepare consolidated financial statements according to IFRS, then also these tagging requirements affect them. However, if there are third country issuers who prepare the financial statements according to third country GAAP, which is equivalent or which is deemed equivalent to IFRS, then there would be not be affected by the by the tagging requirement.
Thank you.
Okay, go ahead, Jane.
So after field test, will you some kind of adjustment on your schedule or your the scope of the taggings? Because I think that after the field test, maybe we, other people also have a similar experience. Maybe we find some kind of problems when a really company tagging on a financial statement. And my experience, maybe most difficulty for the company side is to choose appropriate tags. So maybe do you have any plan after the field test? Yeah, after field test, what kind of plan do you have? For example, the adjustments, some kind of the project whole plan, or to considering about the some kind of the guideline we prepare, or do you have any?
No, certainly. I mean, the conclusions from the field test will be taken into account also with the detailed specifications that we are considering. So if there is something we learn from the field test, then obviously we'll go back to the detailed technical specifications and amend them accordingly, and only then submit afterwards the RTS to the Commission.
Mike, you... Sure. Thanks, Michael. You ready to go, Mike?
Yeah.
Good.
Maybe a slide?
Sorry. So these are the things I'm going to talk about. The first slide was my disclaimer. These are my comments, not those of the Commission. I'll cover these items on the slides. Go to the next slide. So just the backdrop here, the IFRS taxonomy was required for U.S. registrants back in the 2009 release. So this is not a new rule. This is actually an old rule. But what happened is that the Commission was concerned back then about the maturity of the IFRS taxonomy. So what they did is they basically deferred implementation, but the rule continued on. And they deferred implementation until the taxonomy was, quote, approved by the Commission and published on the Commission website. That occurred on March of this year. So what we have now is basically a go-forward activity in which the 2009 rule takes effect. But there is no phase-in. There is no phase-in at all. There is no liability coverage. There is really nothing that existed in 2009. Those dates have all passed. So in substance, we're jumping into the deep end of the pool straight away for periods ending December 15th, 2017. That's the go-live date. Now, if IFRS filers want to file between now And then on a voluntary basis, they're welcome to do so. But what we have is basically a cold start for foreign private issuers that are filing under IFRS taxonomy for the U.S. I would note here that there is a 30-day grace period for an initial filing, and that filing could be an annual filing or it could be a quarterly filing, but whatever that initial filing is, there is a 30-day grace period. Once you've used that grace period, the filer cannot use it again. We have published some FAQs. They're listed on this slide. You can follow that link if you want to see them in detail. We're continuing to update those FAQs as we get persistent questions from the market. Next slide. We are also planning to conduct a webinar on July the 11th with Expro US targeting the vendors. So if you are a vendor or you know of a vendor, you're interested, that would be a good webinar probably to attend. So the scope of the effort is that this impacts basically all FPIs, and the old rule, which included block tagging, policy text block tagging, table tagging, and then each number, not only in the primary tables, but in the entire document, that's the scope of this effort. So again, it's the 09 rule just basically rolled forward for all foreign private issuers using the IFRS taxonomy. We do see that there are components for Regulation SX. So these are regulatory-specific disclosures that FPIs are required to comply with, that because of the way the 09 rule was rolled out, those disclosure requirements are actually articulated currently in the U.S. GAAP taxonomy. So it is likely that early adopters, FPIs, may be directed to leverage those components in the U.S. GAAP taxonomy in the short term. In the longer term, we believe that the IFRS guidance on creating a regulatory-specific taxonomy is a very good idea, and we would think we'd try to move in that direction, but that's not what exists today. That's maybe a good idea, and I'm going to stop saying anything else about that, but you can hear me. Go to the next slide. So this just covers basically all the forms, 20Fs, 40Fs, quarterly reports. We do have some foreign private issuers that do use what we would consider to be domestic forms, 10Ks and Qs and 8Ks. So this is not just about the 20Fs and 40Fs. There are a handful of companies that use those forms. And also, if a company, a foreign private issuer, elected to voluntarily file an IFRS and to file that using the inline format, they'd be welcome to do so. So the inline program is voluntary since last summer. And we have well over 100 companies who have taken us up on that voluntary effort. And we didn't, you know, if FPI would be interested in doing that, we'd be happy to have them do it. Next slide. We are experiencing data quality issues. When we compare the data quality of the XBRL to the data from data aggregators, the data from the XBRL effort is exponentially higher quality than anything we see from a data aggregator. But compared to what it could be, we still see these types of very common errors. We are meeting regularly with the Data Quality Committee from XBRL US. They've generated over 35,000 rules to help on data quality, and those are having a very positive impact. We would like to begin implementing those rules within our filing process on a phase-in basis, and that may be something to pay attention to going forward. I think the point that was raised earlier around the most difficult idea is for a company to actually select the right element to map, to model. We continue to see that as the most subjective data quality issue that's very difficult to discern with a machine-readable rule, but one that we think through education and awareness can be tackled. We do have some staff observations and guidance that we published, and we continue to monitor the Entity-Specific Disclosure Task Force for guidance there, and would hope that we could leverage that at some point in the future. Next slide. We are using the structured data quite extensively inside the commission. both by our enforcement staff and by our Corp Fin staff and by our Office of the Chief Accountants. The idea that no one is using XBRL data is simply an urban myth. That is definitely not the case. So the tools on the right are kind of, I'll just go through them very quickly, but the financial statement data sets are the number one downloaded item on the entire commission website by a factor of 10. There is nothing even close. So if no one's using the data, then somebody's downloading it for grins, and they're really racking up a lot of downloads there. The financial statement query viewer is Google for data, allowing staff to basically query data out of the structured disclosures to do all kinds of comparative analysis, including the dynamic redlining of narrative disclosures. So if a reviewer wants to see what changed in a specific note disclosure, they can do that by simply clicking a mouse and receiving that red line. The inline viewer, there's a link here at the end of the deck that will take you to a video on the inline viewer. I would really encourage you to go take a look at that. There's some very cool features of the inline viewer. The two that I think are most impressive are, the one that's most impressive is the ability to search by topic. So in the past, if you were looking for a disclosure in a report, you had to manually read the report, or maybe you could use the edit find feature in your browser or your PDF document, which will allow you to find the words stock compensation. Using the inline viewer and the reference link base, you can now search for topics, search for disclosures related to the topic of stock compensation, and all of those disclosure elements will be revealed to you, highlighted in a dynamic index provided for you to navigate to them. I would really encourage you to take a look at the video of the inline viewer that's at the end of this deck. That particular feature for an auditor or a preparer is simply amazing. The corporate issuer risk assessment, this is a risk-based dashboard that is now in production in the building, has been so for about a year and a half. The director of enforcement has talked about its benefits publicly. So again, if you have people who think no one is using the XBRL data, when the division director of enforcement speaks about it publicly, I think that's pretty good evidence that it is in use. Finally, we're using the structured data for text analytics. This again is the ability to look at the structured narrative text and discern risk, as well as specific research analytical projects, whether it's revenues or defined benefit plan discount rates. The ability to pull the data from the notes for aggregation across the entire market is a huge benefit. I recently attended a panel discussion in which a Morgan Stanley representative presented one of their analyst reports where they had aggregated unremitted foreign earnings for registrants. This is a note disclosure that's in a sentence back in the notes. It's buried. It's often written in text. But they were able to pull out the XBRL, and that number in the U.S. is over $3 trillion today. So the ability to pull that out from a policy perspective is a pretty powerful idea. Next slide. These are just some links to the resources. And again, I would highlight for you the inline viewer as well as the IFRS FAQs. Thank you.
Mike, the FIN data set, is that the data that has been extracted and made available on the SEC website?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
Yes, it is. And I would say stay tuned because it will be enhanced shortly.
I didn't realize that was being used as much as it is.
Yes. It's really pretty incredible, and that's why I think the financial statement query viewer is also so powerful as well.
Rachel.
Thank you. What are you hearing in terms of preparedness of the preparers for their first set of filing users?
So from the FPIs, it's really a question for the vendors, and that's why we're having the vendor session on the 11th, is to begin, you know, directly engaging them. So for those who have vendors who are prepared, it's, you know, they're going to basically ask the vendors to do it for them. I think getting those vendors up to speed is the challenge.
Okay.
Sure. So since I started to, you know, participate this particular group, I used to ask Mike two things, IXBRL and acceptance of IFRS 2016 taxonomy. So thank you, Mike. I won't harass you. Good job. So I have now four specific questions. So first of all, if you look at IFRS taxonomy 2016 in SEC website, in that table, there is a last line that refers to US GAAP taxonomy. So what is the relationship between IFRS taxonomy and US GAAP taxonomy?
There is no relationship, but there is a filing requirement that companies use the regulation SX disclosures. So any company has to comply with our compliance requirements. That's both for SX and for some industry-specific disclosure tables. Oil and gas would be an example. So those disclosure elements are in the U.S. GAAP taxonomy today.
Okay.
And so that's the purpose of that reference.
If they make disclosure related to...
They're required to do that.
Yeah. Yeah. The second question I have, you did refer about, you know, the Form 6. But there is very limited, you know, the information available in FAQ, whether it requires XBRL tagging or not.
Yeah, the point would be if the company files a 6K with the financial statements, then that would be a tagging requirement if it included the financial statements.
Thank you. The third question I have is about, you know, the workflow of, you know, the taxonomy approval. So, for example, right now, 2017 taxonomy is like a work in progress. What point do you, you know, the approve 2017 taxonomy?
I think it would be a model to follow, probably the U.S. GAAP taxonomy. Once it's put out and approved, then we'll go through our process. You could probably guess a similar timeline for that activity. Maybe a little deferred the first time, but similar timeline.
So, for example, if you look at 2016 taxonomy, they have, I think, three updates, if I remember correctly. You would not approve 2017 taxonomy.
Just be on an annual basis.
Annual basis, right?
Yes.
Once the IFRS Foundation said this is finalized,
yes,
all updates, then you would approve. Is that correct?
Yes. We would look to the annual update from the IFRS Foundation, and then it would go through our process, and we would put on our website as approved.
And my final question. So how do you see, I know it is right now on a comment period, IXBRL, but do you foresee some point in time everything will be on IXBRL format?
I don't know is a short answer. And because we're in a rulemaking process, I have to really limit my, you know, comments there. You know, we have gotten comments. There have been papers written by the consumer community that would be the case. But that's a commission decision that's above my pay grade.
Thank you. Mike, great contribution and good service. Thank you.
Thank you.
Can then move on to Rita's presentation?
Yes, one more question.
Communication. I want to make sure my understanding, if I am mistaken, the page 5, that's maybe the same question to you. So the IFRS adapter company in U.S. can use some elements from U.S. GAAP taxonomy?
Yes.
Is it IFRS only, financial statement, but still?
Only those related to regulation SX and or their industry classifications.
But the industry classification, still company disclosing the financial statement in IFRS, but in my understanding, even though the industry kind of specification, still the GAAP sometimes different requirements.
So these would be specific tables, specific elements that are in the taxonomy that are very clearly marked, regulation SX.
Maybe I'll check the regulation SX, but the again, question is the company can use US GAAP taxonomy in some area?
Some specific limited areas.
Okay.
So if you open up the US GAAP taxonomy down in the 900s, there are specific regulation SX sections.
Okay.
And we're just talking about those sections.
And there's some kind of specific regulations related to disclosures.
Yes, that are regulatory specific. So the IFRS guidance, they publish the IFRS taxonomy, And then they suggest that regulators, when they implement that guidance, they have the IFRS taxonomy and then a separate regulatory taxonomy. Mm-hmm. So that's a great idea. We think it's a good idea, good compliance idea. Just that we haven't gotten to that point yet. Our stuff is still over in the US GAAP taxonomy. Okay?
Yeah. Okay.
So
I'll take it.
Okay.
Anyway.
Okay.
Thank you.